Blog Talk Radio.
It is the Mad Dog Dynasty League podcast, and with me today is a very special guest. Actually, we have a first. We have a guest in studio, first ever in studio guest, a man who goes by many names is joining me on the show today. Tommy, as his mom would call him, T-Buck, Bucko, he's one of my best friends. I might need you to head in the next room, though. We're getting an echo.
We got an echo.
If you're cool with that.
I am getting bounced from the studio.
One of my best friends in all the world, the owner of the Malicious Minds, Tom Buckles.
Hello, hello. What's up?
Thanks for coming on the show, Tom.
No problem.
Tom stopped by, and I hijacked him because we missed the first chance to put the show on. So, believe it or not,
he's here.
Oh, you're stepping outside. Look at you. Are you going outside in the heat? Oh,
it
have
is.
Andy turn the TV off, will you? So, believe it or not, hey, live radio, I love this. Believe it or not, Mad Dog entering its fifth year, 5 years later, and look at us now. How you feeling about Mad Dog after 5 years? Where does this experience rate for you?
It's somewhere that we've discussed going many, many, many years ago, and I think it's been a great experience, and I see it going in many more directions in the future to create the league to be even better and mimicking exactly how the NFL organizations run.
One of the things I actually started a thought, and I didn't complete the thought for our listeners, is the fact that we had Tom scheduled for an interview previously, and that fell by the wayside. So this is kind of a replacement video. I've hijacked him. He stopped by, and I'm like, we're doing this. Come on. So let's keep rolling. I am absolutely excited to have you on the show here because you're one of the sticks that stir the pot in all the leagues that we're in together, and nobody makes more trades and, frankly, takes more chances than you. And I say that as a tribute, not as a cut. A lot of guys, myself included at times, don't have the guts to take some of the chances that you take. But you'll throw caution to the wind and you'll. So let's jump right in by asking about your overall philosophy when it comes to fantasy football. How do you describe your philosophy and all the chances that you take? I mean, what drives you?
Depending on which league we're discussing, if we're talking Mad Dog, I'd like to have a nice mixture of nice, young, up-and-coming players. I also like to have, that hardcore guys that have been in the league and know you're going to get your guaranteed points from every year to year. And also like to try to steer away from guys that are injury prone in the past. So it makes it easier for me to not have to worry about replacing them because I'll have a nice fill-in right behind.
But what gets you to take chances, though? Like, to take you over to King for a day or redraft league, you were the first guy ever to take a defensive player in the second round. Then you were the first guy ever to take a defensive player in the first round. This past year, you went defense with, like, I think your first six picks almost.
Yeah, I completed the first six rounds. I got, my defensive line, linebackers, and my secondary right out of the way. And I figured, the guys that I'm grabbing, these are guys that are going to get me possibly between 30 to 40 points just through the six guys. And, as far as offense went, I mean, there's quarterbacks that drop. You can always pick a guy. Like a couple of years ago, I picked Romo pretty late. Phantoms just got him this last year that won him a title.
See, what makes you do it, though? Because I saw it. I've thought about it. I've talked about going defense and adding up the points like you just did and say, well, if you took this and you took this and you took this, the thing is that it's unconventional. and it really takes a lot to take that chance. So what is it about, you know, how do you take that chance where a lot of us sit back and we're like, ah, I can't do it, I can't take that swing?
But I guess that's what just makes me a different part from the rest of the owners. Like you said, I'm willing to take that risk. Willing to try something different every time. Like I said, I've been parts of many different little jokes and, you know, hits here and there, but, you know, none of the other people are ready, willing to try and do anything like that. And, you know, I don't like to fit that normal mold. You know, I don't like to be stay inside the lines. I want to bust out, you know.
Well, there you go. And I'll take swings. I love to swing for the fences. If I had to, you know, talk about what my strategy is, I swing for the fences on guys. And it's okay if I make an out because I know that, you know, you hit a lot of home runs, you are going to make a lot of outs. But what's crazy is that I'll still hold back some. I'll still be, like, within reason. You'll just go and attack it. And I know I respect that, and I think a lot of other guys look at that, too, with respect. Why don't we talk about one of the trades from last year that was along the lines of what I'm talking about here. It was classic you, big names, lots of players, and a home run swing. You sent Bryce Brown, Marcus Colston, Calvin Johnson, Josh Gordon, and Brian Cushing to You're in Trouble for Jordan Matthews, Emmanuel Sanders, Mike Wallace, Jason Witten, Warlow, and a first-round pick. It's a lot of players. How did that work out for you in hindsight? Because you gave away, again, big, big names, Calvin Johnson, Josh Gordon.
Yeah, I figured with Josh Gordon that, you know, I had seen enough. I wasn't one to be too worried about his off-the-field issues. I was like, all right, I'll give him that benefit of the doubt, second chance. But it just kept building and building and building. And I was like, you know what? This is reminiscent of that Tennessee receiver, Henry. And I'm like, I got to get out of this. But to get rid of, you know, Calvin and Colston, you know, I gave up two old guys in the latter part of their careers to get Calvin from the Pallies and, you know, Roddy White and Andre Johnson in the deal. And I felt, you know what, now that they've got another couple guys there, I think that there is a swing in the way they're going to run their offense, and I think what's-his-name's going to be more of a draw or decoy in a way, and that'll open up the middle of the field and, you know, allow, like, guys like Golden Tate to just take off.
So you're killing me. You brought up the Pallies. I got to throw this out there now. You know the famous story about you traded with them, and, like, a day or two later, you wanted to trade back for, was it Roddy White? You got to tell us about this story because that's totally you, man. You make the move, and a day later, you're not afraid to go back and try it again.
Yeah, I was trying to go to the basket and trying to shyster a move back. I think I was trying to get a pick involved in there too, but he wasn't having it. And, yeah, as we said, it's a little bit of a butt of a joke. But the main things on my end of that deal were I got rid of Cushing. I knew he was an injury problem. The other guy I got was Warlow. He's year in and year out has been putting up solid numbers. And then to get, you know, a young guy who's going to be the number one over in Philly and Jordan Matthews, and then to get Emmanuel Sanders with Peyton Manning is just, you know, sweet.
Are you going NWO Red on me?
Yeah.
Are you going NWO Wolfpack on me? It was too sweet.
Yep, and just to throw in the boot, give me a first-round pick, too. I mean, and at the time we did the trade, we were fighting for the division. We were exactly tied at the point and everything. And I'm like, you know what, I'll make this deal with him, and hopefully my end works out. And, you know, like you said, I took a swing for the fences, and, you know, he ended up winning the division.
That first-round pick ended up being Marcus Mariota, and we're going to talk about that later on. Why don't we move on to one of the other standard questions that I ask everybody when I get them on. Team names often have a special meaning to guys. What led you to pick Malicious Minds?
I don't know. I always thought if I had, like, a band or something like that, that I would come along the way of calling my team name, or not team name, but a band name, Malicious Minds. you know, something like that toxic acid rock, you know, real death metal type stuff. So, like, you know, Malicious Mind stuff coming right off the cuffs, you know.
As the years have unfolded, do you have a favorite rival or rivals, maybe a team or two that you take a little bit extra enjoyment beating?
No, not really. I haven't. Well, if we're talking King for a Day, I like to beat my buddy Mark, Meat, as we call him. He's one guy I always like to go against. Since he had come into the league, he hadn't beat me, and I think it was 4 or 5 years in, he finally did get his first victory against me. And I think now he has 2 wins against me in the 5 or 6 years he's been there. So, I mean, in that league, it's him. Other league, you know what, everybody in there has been pretty cool. You know, I respect all the owners and how their philosophies are and everything. So, yeah, I really don't have a beef and quarrel and nothing with any other teams. I actually, you know, I look forward to every single week and enjoy, you know, the whole ownership and scheme of the league.
So what do you think of the division alignments in Mad Dog? I think time has proven the divisions are equally tough. You've got, you know, Dream Team was on here the other day and rightfully beating his chest about some of the accomplishments of the Red Division and the high-scoring teams. You've got Bill and Steve have been on from the White Division talking about, hey, you know, you can have all the flash, but we've got the championships over here in the White Division. 3 of the 4 championships are from the White. What are you thinking about the division alignments?
I actually think our division is possibly the weakest when it comes out to everything. If you shake it out, if you just look at, you know, the overall records going through, I believe the other leagues, our divisions have much more stronger suited teams. I mean, we're pretty much the, in a way, a doormat kind of division. We will usually get in at the bare minimum, almost like years ago when a team from the NFC West got in with a 7-9 record. That would be our division, you know, guy coming in, win the division with that kind of a record, and then, you know, hopefully winning that first round by chance. If not, you know, you won your division and some money, I guess.
Well, what division would you say, I'm looking at the stats here, what division would you guess has been the toughest division for you? And I will tell you up front that your own division, to back up what you were saying about how it's been a little easier in your opinion, you have fared very well within your division. You are 15-9 all time inside your division. That's your all-time division record, 15-9. Which other division, where would you say you've had a tougher time, the Red or the White? The Red is the division with myself, Dream Team, Minotaurs, used to be Sean, now it's Scott, and the other division, the White, has got Steve, Gar, Bill, and Tim.
I pretty much get pasted by yourself and Dream Team. I think I fare up evenly with the other two guys in your division. And then, what is it, the White division, there's, I don't know, I think I have an upside-down record against that division. So I think that division is, you know, widely all around a tough division. Like they're like the old days with the NFC East. These guys are scrapping it down to the very last week. Whereas when I see your guys' division, you got one or two guys just blowing out, you know, and you guys have like a 2-3 game like lead on the next two guys. So it's usually a two team, you know, horse race with your division. And that's a tough team to take on. And then you have the other guy in there that usually makes the wild card. So it's a tough group.
Well, this is crazy. You are 8-9 against the White Division all time. You are 2-2 against Bill. You're 2-2 against Tim, and you're 2-2 against Steve. Gar has gotten the better end of you. He has beat you 3 times. And you've beaten him twice. So 2-3 over in the Red. I'm going to shock you because you're 2-3 against me all time in Mad Dog. You're 1-3 against Dream Team. You, my friend, believe this or not, the Minotaurs and Show Me Your TDs, those two franchises, you're 0-4 against those guys. I would not have expected that.
Yep, that is a shocker.
Those are the two teams that have given you the most trouble in Mad Dog history. Oh, never you've never beaten the Minotaurs or the TDs.
That's surprising.
You going to turn that around this year?
Who knows? I'll have to flip a coin and see what happens this year. I might go nuts or maybe not nuts. I don't know.
Well, let me ask you the next question I have is, this is a generic question meant for people that maybe have never tried a Dynasty League. And what I'd like you to do is tell people what in particular makes a Dynasty League and specifically Mad Dog enjoyable for you. You know, what do you like about it? Tell them what's cool about this Dynasty League format.
I really like the mimicking of how our league is to the NFL. And I like how it's transitioning to even add more things that are being changed, like into the NFL. I love that there's the salary cap numbers. You really have to be on top of your team at all times, just so you know what's happening. If you don't keep up to date, you know, something could swing by you and you're down a guy or two. So you always got to look for that trade out there or that little sneaky pick to get, you know.
Yeah. What are some of your favorite memories thus far in Mad Dog?
This year's rookie draft, seeing somebody get the pick right in front of me.
Don't spoil it. I've got that question set up for later.
Yeah, somebody got in front of me this year, and I'm like, oh, they took my guy. But anyway, I don't know. I think another one would have been having a guy last year with, like, the best second half of the season stats in his position and then retire after not even ever having a concussion in his career. And he just walked away from the game. I mean,
you're talking about Chris Borland, and that is on my list of questions. I'm just going to go right to it. How did the loss of Chris Borland affect your team? I mean, for any of us in the league, that had to be crushing because he potentially was the next stud linebacker. And before he even got started, he's gone. And it's so hard to believe. Patrick Willis moves on. The door is open. The guy's got all the potential in the world. What do you want to tell other owners? Kind of that just had to be crushing.
Yeah, it was like my Mike Singletary guy or something. You know, that strong signal caller in the middle. He was your general on the defense that I saw. You know, the torch was passed. Willis was retiring, and I'm like, man, this is going to be all his. And then to see him go like that without even, you know, having an injury of any sort like that, it just devastated me. I'm like, I don't know how to recover from that. And so I took a swing on the fence to try and get another linebacker who I think possibly could be a three-down linebacker in Perriman. So.
Well, let's kick back to my base questions, which we hold a rules meeting every year for anyone that doesn't know. And I give owners that come on and do an interview, I give them a chance to say whether there's a seed that they'd like to plant in the minds of their fellow owners for next year's rules meeting. Anything that you'd like to talk about? Like to see changed or tweaked?
As of right now, I do not have anything I'd like to tweak or see changed. I know there's other people who have mentioned certain things, but you know what? As soon as something new comes about, you know, I like to try it out like we do for a one-year tryout thing and see if it works, how it affects the scoring and the league in general. And then at that point, we can just voice our opinion if we want to keep it or dump it. I mean, it's like King for a Day when we had coaches to be drafted. I mean, that was kind of hokey, but, you know, it was something to just try different, you know. I got nothing right off the top of my head that I can think of right now.
That's all right. Let's get into some trade secrets here. As you know, Mad Dog has a very unique starting lineup on offense. We're talking one quarterback, one tight end, and four offensive flex. That's running back, wide receiver, tight end. What's your favorite formation? Have you found one that works better than others on offense?
I've usually gone the one running back, three wideout deal. And then just this last past year, I've noticed that there were a lot of guys that were putting up huge points in the secondary that were equaling out the output of some of these linebackers we had. So I was like, you know what? These guys are actually pretty valuable. So the format, I like the whole idea of it. And
so that was my next question on defense. What do you like to do? Because it's two defensive linemen for our listeners that maybe aren't aware. Two defensive linemen, and then we go six defensive flex. That can be defensive line, linebacker, or defensive back. So as you're correctly stating, there was a rule change in the league a couple of years back that increased the scoring for defensive backs, and that has led to the secondary players, meaning safeties, cornerbacks, scoring much more. So have you found – you used to be a heavy linebacker guy. You used to go six linebacker almost every single time, and now, like you said, you're thinking more about safeties?
Yeah, there's these veteran safeties, corners, whatever, that are actually putting up equal or sometimes better numbers than these linebackers. So it's come to the point where, you know, certain linebackers just need to sit on a bench, and you got, you know, unless you got the core guys, these main guys, you got guys like Jenkins and, you know, even what's the name, Woodson, that was on our team for the Packers. I mean, there's guys out there that are putting up huge numbers.
Let's move on with the time that we have left and ask some more questions about you and the way that you prepare every year. I think it's really interesting for everybody to hear the different ways that guys prepare for our leagues. What sites and magazines do you like to patron?
I'm not usually into the magazines. For the drafts.
Yeah, you liar.
Magazines, I used to.
You don't like any magazines that don't have centerfolds, is that it?
Yeah, if they don't have a three-page pullout, I'm not in. But, no, I used to bring books and things that were, like, you know, 3-4 years old, you know, just to screw around with people. I mean, here you got Michael Vick on the cover with the Falcons, and it's, you know, way old. You got one that I would bring that had Marshall Faulk in it. And those are just throw-out things, but usually I don't sleep the night before a draft. I'm, like, up the whole night through to the morning. And, you know, I'm gassed later on when I get home later on after that draft and then the Mad Dog draft. So,
well, how do you prepare for the rookie draft is another question. Where do you like to get some rookie info?
Football Guys, what is it, RotoWire, Pro Football Talk, I think that is NBC's channel. The TV is what it is. I just see it as with the way that the world's changed with the ease of the internet and everything, you can get the information from that quicker than you can than watching it on TV, even though they got that scrolling ticker there.
We got about 6.5 minutes left, so let's move into some of the rookie stuff we wanted to talk about. You mentioned before there was a rookie that got away. Why don't you go ahead and tell the audience about that?
Well, I was sitting pretty at two. I was like, you know what? I looked at who was picking at number one. I'm like, I believe they're going running back. I kept saying to myself, they're going running back. So, yeah, Mr. Amari Cooper would just fall to me at two. And at 10, maybe there'd be a back or, you know, a quarterback I'd get. And all of a sudden, somebody slid in there. Some crazy person slid into one and snatched him up by me and did the exact thing I would have done. I would have took the receiver first and took any one of the two running backs that would have been there at three. And that's where I put my hats off to you. For the way you did your maneuvering and getting in there, I believe you have got Calvin Johnson with better, I think, more better equipment and weaponry, and this kid's going to just get better and better over the years.
I'm real excited to have Cooper on my team, and it's I just consider him the safest pick in the draft. That's what I said about him, and it just keeps coming to mind every time I think about it. But let's move on more about you this year. After Cooper was taken, you had to make a tough call between Melvin Gordon and Todd Gurley. You took Gordon. Can you tell everybody why? Because the consensus amongst all the magazines and websites was that Gurley was the number one running back.
Yeah, I don't know. I went for a guy that's kind of the body style type as a Jamal Charles, somebody that could take it to the next level, like, really fast. The only negative on him is he's going to have a hard time, and I've seen him having hard times with pass protection. So in areas where he could be in there to, you know, get the short dump off, he's going to be out, and there's going to be a Danny Woodhead or guys like that there. So I'm just hoping eventually he will learn how to pick up the blitz and, you know, help so Rivers doesn't get killed. And Gurley, you know, I shied away from him because of injury history, and I mean, it may be a mistake, it might not, but he will be an every down back, or should be, but they also have a kid that they got last year in Trey Mason, which is, you know, it's a tough one because he did put up numbers, and that allowed them to dump Zach Stacy.
I think this is great to hear guys be able to talk about, like Dream Team was on yesterday talking about, or a couple days, was it yesterday, talking about why he took Max Williams, and to get a chance to hear you talk about you were in this position, which I'd love to hear what a lot of guys would have done when they're staring at Gordon and Gurley and they're trying to make that call. So in your second round pick, your second pick in the first round, you took Marcus Mariota of Tennessee. Your second round pick was Denzel Perryman of San Diego, linebacker. Running back David Johnson of the Cardinals was your third round pick. Linebacker Bud Dupree, pass rushing specialist for the Steelers, with your fourth pick. And then the fifth pick was Bryce Petty, quarterback of the Jets, fifth round. Care to comment on any of these guys in particular?
Yeah, my guy Bryce Petty is only one injury away from possibly starting. Mariota's already starting. I got him, and I figured, you know what, he's a guy who could either, you know, get you like Russell Wilson. He could get you with the pass, or he can run and get you by his legs. So took a shot with him, but I'm actually happy that I got, you know, Perryman. Like I said earlier, I believe he could be that every down type of linebacker. I think the Arizona guy, I was kind of like, I didn't know what to do, and, you know, I kind of just made a pick, you know, seeing a name out there, and I probably could have grabbed somebody else that I probably could have used or needed, so, at that point in time, it looked like a guy I should take, but that's one regret.
Couple minutes left here. Let's roll through a few more questions. How would you describe your strategy over the past years in Mad Dog? What kind of GM are you? Ted Thompson, draft and build, Ron Wolf, go and make it happen? I mean, anybody you would compare yourself to?
I'd have to be a little of each of them. I mean, like I said, going to do that trade to get Calvin from Pally's and then to go and trade him away to get youth. You know, I went both ways there.
What are some of the best moves you've made in Mad Dog over the years? Just one or two.
The worst move I could tell you is I traded away Philip Rivers to help you were in trouble, and all of a sudden I had no quarterback
for that week. Yep, that was my next question, is worst moves. What about a favorite move, a move that worked out? I know you took Josh Gordon when he was, you know, way young and coming out of the supplemental draft. That had to be one of your better moves.
Yeah, I actually like the Chris Borland and guys like that I took, you know, and they actually worked, but then to have them leave it killed me.
Well, has the strategy of any other owners caught your eye? You find yourself admiring the job that some guys are doing? I mean, your division is very tight.
I do like Pally's style, and You're in Trouble. Those two are two teams I kind of keep an eye on.
Well, Tom, we got about 30 seconds left. We're up against the clock here. Is there anything you want to say in general or any comments, any topics we didn't cover?
No, I was just wondering if I could get Roddy White back. That's all.
I love it. Well, hey, thanks again for coming on the show, Bucko. I got to tell you, it's just been a pleasure having you on here. I am going to fire up the old radio here with a little vintage Sting, Seek and Destroy. Peace. So, thanks again on behalf of my guest today, Tom T-Bone, Tommy Bucko. I'm Rick Goreski saying thanks for joining me on another episode of the Mad Dog Dynasty League podcast.